There are no more devout warriors to the God Emperor of mankind than the orders of the Adepta Sororitas. To witness their wars of faith as an ally is to be awestruck with the force of their belief. Deafening peals of battle psalms ring out, blaring from consecrated emitters and shouted from the lips of these zealous holy soldiers. Angelic hosts descend on columns of holy fire as warriors equipped with winged jump packs deliver the Emperor's judgment to the craven foe, no matter where they hide. Their elaborately crafted war gear and archaic tanks are illuminated with the sacred writings of saints and anointed with holy unguents. The Battle Sisters of the Adepta Sororitas bear the holy weaponry with which the Emperor's legions conquered the galaxy and illuminate the faithless in lethal volleys from the holy trinity of Bolter, Flamer, and Melta weapons. It is said the Emperor's benediction touches each of these warriors, manifesting as a nimbus of holy light in which his power is revealed in miraculous deeds of fortitude and divine strength. To face such righteous faith and holy ire is to face the conviction of belief itself. From blasphemers, heretics, and mutant strands to Xenos breeds, idolaters, and iconoclasts, all cower before the judgment of the God Emperor and his sisters of battle. The Imperial Creed. To humanity, the Master of Mankind is a deity, the God Emperor. He is the source of their strength, their defense against abomination, and the deserving object of their adoration and loyalty. The galaxy-spanning religion that surrounds his worship is the Imperial Creed, its rites overseen by the Ecclesiarchy's priesthood, and its doctrine enforced by the Adepta Sororitas. Amongst the untold billions that populate the Imperium's planets, the Imperial Creed is the official religion. From the teeming slums of hive worlds to the noble spires that rise over civilized worlds, on isolated frontier planets, and aboard the countless ships that ply stable warp routes between them, the Emperor is deified and worshipped. Every day, offerings are made to him in praise, in tithe, and in blood, through the endless wars fought in his name. It is the Ecclesiarchy that provides the structure through which these offerings are demanded. Known formally as the Adeptus Ministorum, the Ecclesiarchy raise ostentatious temples and meager chapels, giant cathedrums that accommodate thousands, and shrines that house saintly relics, drawing pilgrims from many sectors away. The Ecclesiarchy's complex hierarchies of cardinals, missionaries, preachers, and zealous laity, under the overall leadership of the Ecclesiarchy on Terra, ensure the prescribed prayers and invocations are made, and teach the masses to guard against heresy and deviancy. These priests are tasked with maintaining and spreading the faith of the Imperium, converting the denizens of rediscovered worlds, and giving sermons to warn against laxity of vigilance. What would grow into the Ecclesiarchy began as one disparate group of religious cults when the Emperor still walked among his subjects. Their illicit worship, fomenting in secret. In the wake of the Horus Heresy, when it became known that the Emperor had crushed the arch-traitor Horus and ascended to the Golden Throne, he was openly worshipped on hundreds of worlds. The nascent Ecclesiarchy crushed or absorbed their rivals over many centuries, spreading to every strata of the Imperial life before their recognition in M32 as the Imperium's official religious authority. Now, their influence and power is nigh on inescapable. From workers in Munitorum complexes and sump-dwelling gangs, to cloistered bureaucratic scribes and guardsmen fighting on the front lines, almost all of humanity is ingrained with the concept of the Emperor's divinity. They know the sweat and sacrifice needed to honor it, and fear more than anything the vengeful punishment for not meeting such requirements. The Ecclesiarchy's priests keep a close watch on their congregations, ever alert to the seeds of heresy. Witchcraft and mutation are rooted out, and whole populations are whipped up into frenzied zealotry, incited to turn on anyone suspected of consorting with Xenos or demons. The Adeptus Ministorum has the authority to seize, painfully interrogate, and execute those it suspects of crimes against the Imperial Creed. Often, in the most horrific and public manner. Some heresies, however, run far deeper than individual blasphemers and isolated cells of impure cults. When widespread deviancy rears its head, when idolaters amass in armed rebellion, or the Ecclesiarchy's sacred holdings are under threat, the Adeptus Auroratus are unleashed in a storm of righteous fire. They stand as the Adeptus Ministorum's enforcers and its most zealous defenders. Commonly known as the Sisters of Battle, the Adeptus Auroratus are the spiritual descendants of a warrior sect known as the Daughters of the Emperor. Rather than be disbanded upon their discovery by the Ecclesiarchy, as most such sects were, their incredible skill and utmost dedication to the God Emperor were viewed as useful assets. During the reign of the then Ecclesiarch, the notorious Goge Van Dyer, they rose to become the Adeptus Ministorum's elite holy warriors, under the leadership of their founding matriarchs. the Adeptus Sororitas are upheld as the most pious of the Imperial Creed's adherents, fighting in its name to eradicate any who threaten the purity of mankind. They comprise a number of strict ascetic orders, the most numerous and conspicuous of which are the Orders Militantes, which form the Adeptus Ministorum's military strength. They project the Ecclesiarchy's power through the Imperium from the halls of the Ecclesiarchal Palace on Terra to blood-soaked battlefields on countless worlds. The Adeptus Sororitas' primary charge is to wage wars of faith against those whose very existence is a danger to the Imperium. The wretched heretic, the unsanctioned psyker, and the abominable mutant. Yet, they also fight to purge the galaxy of the hated Xenos, driving back any creatures that dare taint the God Emperor's realm. The Sisters of Battle carry out the annihilation of those whose faithlessness has placed them beyond hope of redemption, and they do so as a sacred duty. The act of fighting in defense of their faith against the foul heretics that would tear it down is itself deemed a hallowed honor. When not at war, they spend much of their time in prayer to the saints of the Imperium for guidance. These acts of worship carry over into their rigorous combat drills, periods of fasting and moments of reflection on the deeds of their founders, ensuring that their physical conditioning goes hand in hand with their spiritual fortitude. The Matriarchs. Imperial history has known thousands of saints, many of whom were martial exemplars in life and worshipped by those who continue to purge the Imperium. The Adeptus Sororitas revere 6 saints before all others, for these were the Matriarchs. Warriors all, they fought for their faith at the Sisterhood's very founding during an era of faithlessness. When the Adeptus Ministorum was established as the Imperium's official religion, records from the Imperial Palace show that the Ecclesiarchy sought to consolidate its hold by outlawing and dismantling the other emperor-worshipping cults. With its growing wealth, the armies at its disposal were enormous, and the Ecclesiarch's position became so powerful that he and his successors became High Lords of Terra. In M36, the Ecclesiarch Goge Van Dyre usurped the position of High Lord of the Administratum as well. Through bribery, assassination, and coercion, Van Dyre was afforded unprecedented authority. With it, according to the Hagiographia Primus, he sought to bring the Imperium under his heel. But those who opposed his tyranny grew in number. Thus flourished a time of terror lasting for decades, during which billions died, whole planets burned, and faith itself wavered under Van Dyre's despotic regime. The histories refer to this period as the Reign of Blood. The original Daughters of the Emperor were discovered on the little-known Agri world of San Lior at the height of the Reign of Blood. They were a small and isolated cult of a few hundred sisters, devoted to worshiping the Emperor and maintaining an inner purity. The daughters studied ancient arts of war, clearing their minds of worldly considerations in order to hone their battle skills. Illuminated biographies by Van Dyer's scribes describe the way in which the ecclesiarch honored San Lior with an ecclesiastical visit. Taking oaths of fealty from the daughters after deceiving them into thinking he held the God Emperor's favor. The daughters of the Emperor, headed by their leader, Alicia Dominica, were instated as Van Dyer's bodyguard. They were his blade of judgment and his tool of vengeance against any slight perceived by his increasingly fragile sanity. Despite his vast forces and the bloody defense offered up by his elite bodyguard, Van Dyer's combined enemies eventually besieged the ecclesiarchal palace. What transpired next is not recorded fully or consistently. Some sources contend that a number of the Emperor's own bodyguards, the mysterious Adeptus Custodes, advanced into the ecclesiarchal palace through hidden means and spoke humbly with six members of the ecclesiarch's bodyguard. Others suggest that the custodians fiercely declaimed Van Dyer as an enemy of the Emperor. However, all surviving fragments of the encounter, remembered in choral plain song, electro-tapestries, and illuminated scripts, agree on its outcome. Unable to sway the six devout bodyguards to abandon the insane ecclesiarch, the custodians led them through uncharted ways to the most sacred place on Terra, the chambers of the Golden Throne itself. Alicia Dominica and her sisters Catherine, Lucia, Mina, Silvana, and Arabella entered the chambers alone. None alive now, save the God Emperor himself, know what was imparted to them. Yet, when they returned to Van Dyer's side, Alicia denounced the High Lord's corruption to her order. Surrounded by her five senior warriors, she beheaded the mad priest with one fell blow of her blade. Morven Vol, Abbess Sanctorum of the Adepta Sororitas. Spiritual and military leadership of the Adepta Sororitas is vested in Morven Vol, the recently elevated Abbess Sanctorum. By her uncompromising command is the might of the Order's militant unleashed to scour worlds clean with the fire of her aggressive piety. Vol does not direct such crusades from afar, but plunges into battle at the forefront of the fight. Morven Vol issues her directives in clipped and severe tones, her young features always set in an expression of stern resolve. Her strident devotion to the God Emperor and the defense of the Imperium is beyond question. And she is the beacon to which the entire sisterhood looks as their spiritual and martial exemplar. Vol is a warrior first and foremost. She is a superlative frontline commander and expert combatant. However, she must be more than just this, for a galaxy-spanning force awaits her every order, and the guardianship of the faith of mankind is in her hands. These are heavy burdens to bear. Rather than a mark of honor, the heirs to Saint Dominica consider the position of abbess to be the highest of duties and responsibilities. One to be born with stoicism, rigid devotion, and humble acceptance. The former abbess's ship was declared lost en route from Ophelia 7 to Holy Terra during the anarchic cataclysm when the Great Rift split the Imperium. News of this dire loss was achingly slow to reach the wider Adeptus Sororitas, for amidst such galactic unrest, every order and far-flung mission was on its own, maintaining their isolated devotion in the face of encroaching madness. Only as the darkness began to recede was the terrible loss uncovered. The need for an icon of leadership was greater than ever, and the Ecclesiarchy appealed to the convent Sanctorum and Prioris to submit their candidate for abbess. Amongst those considered, Vol was by far the youngest. She was an aggressive and selfless Celestian superior of the Order of the Argent Shroud, whose dedication in the face of monstrous onslaughts had earned her the approval of her somber order. The complex factions within the ecclesiarchal palace on Terra believed that so young and politically inexperienced a sister might be more easily maneuvered. Her expected naivety would be a gateway for the Ecclesiarchy to exert more influence into the sisters' operations and internal hierarchies than convention dictated. What many within the Ecclesiarch's ear wanted was a ceremonial and malleable figurehead. What they got was a forthright and iron-willed warrior. Morven Vol was on a campaign in the Reskard Purgation when the Ecclesiarchy's delegation arrived. The priest delivered the Ministorum's declaration with ostentatious ceremony and layered ritual. Scarred and blood-stained, her silver armor chipped and fire-blackened, Celestian Superior Vol listened in absolute silence and without emotion to the elaborate ceremony of appointment, couched in terms of mere invitation. She then stunned the congregated bishops, prelates, hierarchs, and confessors by quietly requesting a period of prayer on the matter. Vol entered her mission's shrine to Saint Silvana and undertook a solitary meditation for 3 days, while increasingly nervous priests paced anxiously. When she emerged, she seemed to those present to walk taller, her eyes hard and unreadable to the clergy, some of whom involuntarily backed away from her. With a handful of words, Vol accepted the appointment. She commended a successor to her canoness before turning on her heel and striding swiftly for the priest's orbital transfer ship. Having planned many days of worship and ceremony to mark the appointment, gathered priests were aghast. Only a handful had the presence of mind to hasten in her wake. In the months after her arrival upon Holy Terra, Vol soon proved herself a dreaded opponent to those who sought to control her. She continued to wear full battle armor when receiving senior members of the Holy Synod, intimidating and unnerving them with her pitiless stare and brusque responses. Vol threw herself into re-establishing personal contact with as many orders as possible, firmly deflecting any priests who tried to assure her that matters were already in hand. She sought to satisfy the orders that the Abbess Sanctorum once more stood as their commander, absorbing data on their current crusades, demanding field reports and strategic dispositions, and ascertaining what they were doing to throw back the flood of impious savagery that boiled out of the Great Rift. It can be expected that Vol, young as she was, and propelled so suddenly to the rarefied heights of power, must have wrestled with questions of faith and self-confidence. Yet, whatever struggles took place behind the doors of her mind remained private. Not once did the new Abbess Sanctorum allow even a crack to show in the armor of her faith. It did become clear, however, that Vol chafed at the reins of what she saw as personal inaction, when so many other sisters of battle were fighting and dying. Even when, upon the recommendation of Rebute Gilliman, Vol was elevated to the status of High Lord of Terra, it did little to cool her ardor for battle. Few within the Adeptus Sororitas were surprised when the Abbess declared herself the commander of the Ecclesiarch's crusade against the traitorous trade worlds of the Philosopher's Belt. Since then, she has taken to the field in person dozens of times during her short tenure, leading the forces of every Order Majoris. Not given to rousing sermons and uplifting oratory, Abbess Vol instead leads by example on the battlefield, letting her deeds and service to the God Emperor speak for her. Numerous senior sisters from several orders Dialogus and Famulus compliment Vol's command staff, deftly dealing with the slew of generals, planetary governors, admirals, and more that daily clamor for her attention. Morven Vol does not see herself as the Emperor's chosen, but as an instrument of defense who must place herself between the Imperial Creed and the countless horrors that seek to defile it. Her sense of duty to this lofty position means that she will never recklessly submit herself to an unwinnable war. Martyrdom, as her former order taught, is a release from one's duty, and not its ultimate expression. As all her predecessors understood, the position of Abbess Sanctorum is a burden that can be set aside only when the last heretic, mutant, Xenos, and demon is expunged from existence. Only then might she step back into anonymity as a sister of her order. Wars of Faith. Since their inception, the Adeptus Auroratus have bolstered their ranks to the point that their presence is now felt far across the Imperium. No longer the Ecclesiarch's bodyguard, they are an active and crusading military force, crushing the enemies of the Imperial Creed wherever they fester, and illuminating the Emperor's realm as a beacon of faith. When humanity is faced with a substantial threat, it falls to the High Lords of Terra to order a crusade against mankind's enemies. Such crusades are enormous military operations that mobilize multiple branches of the Imperium's colossal war machine, including Space Marine chapters, Astra Militarum regiments, Navis Imperialis fleets, as well as forces of the Adeptus Ministorum. But the Ecclesiarch also has the individual authority to issue calls to battle when the sanctity of the Imperial Creed is imperiled. Such large-scale mobilizations are known as Wars of Faith. When a war of faith is declared, those Sororitas orders able to respond send their finest troops to obliterate the heretics and sinners marked for death by the Ecclesiarch. Fleets of Ministorum vessels descend upon the planet, system, or sector that has been targeted, ferrying sisters of battle and non-militant adjutants by the thousands into the war zone. Yet, it is not only the Sororitas who will answer the call to war. Other servants of the Ministorum join themselves to the sisters' commanderies. Missionaries who have spent decades spreading the Imperial Creed to the inhabitants of a rediscovered world will instantly turn their ire on the populace if a war of faith is declared. Operating with small contingents of hand-picked warriors of Fraterra's militia, these missionaries are more than happy to combine their purgatorial efforts with those of the incoming Adeptus Auroratus. Similarly, preachers who have been operating in nearby systems gather all manner of zealous recruits to their cause. The most impassioned cults of the Imperial Creed are roused to action, and through tearful prayers, their members beseech the Emperor for the chance to loose their righteous fury upon the faithless. As one, the massed ranks of believers envelop their enemies, slaughtering and burning those whom the Emperor's light cannot redeem. A war of faith may last decades, or even centuries, and is not considered over until all trace of the heretical enemy is scoured from the galaxy. Since her appointment to the position of Abbess Sanctorum, Morvan Vol has overseen the unleashing of many more wars of faith. As the Imperium reestablishes contact with multiple sectors and systems in the wake of the Great Rift's torturous opening, tales of demonic incursions, heretical cults, sorceress mutation, and Xenos infiltration have soared. Abhorring inaction, Vol has committed large forces of the Adeptus Auroratus to the chain worlds of Quand, the Rigorsh Straits, and the reconsecration of Marlia's tomb, among a host of other sacred campaigns, while also ensuring the Sisters of Battle accompany as many of Gilliman's Indominus crusades as possible. At her direction, dozens of Order's militants have dispatched forces to embattle and stalled wars of faith as the Abbess seeks to bring them to swift conclusions and ensure her armies are ever on the advance. Vol has also assigned crusades to seek ways across the Great Rift and the dark wells of silence that grow even within the Imperium Sanctus, to investigate the fate of Adeptus Sororitas forces, whose every trace seems to have vanished. She intends for Saint Josimin's Traverse, the Nachaman Gauntlet, the Shield Worlds of Baal, and the Pariah Nexus to all ring to the shouted prayers of the Adeptus Sororitas, reigniting the beacons of the Imperium's faith. Celestine, the living saint. Sculpted wings spread wide, halo blazing, an ardent blade in hand, Saint Celestine is an embodiment of the God Emperor's might. She shines like a star amid the smoke and fumes of the battlefield, radiating holy light. The faithful are filled with strength and courage by her presence, even as heretics recoil in terror. Those who flee are wise to do so, for Celestine strikes like the Emperor's own judgment, smiting the unrighteous with a strength that belies her human form. With a gesture, the living saint calls fires of retribution down from on high, or infuses her sick and injured allies with healing energies. Of her life before she was declared a living saint, very little is known of Celestine, other than that she was a sister Repentia of the Order of Our Martyred Lady. She was but one warrior amongst those who fell in war against the heretics of the Palatine Schism. But after her body had been cleansed of the blood and filth of battle, she rose once more, standing flawless before the faithful in attendance. The remainder of the Palatine Crusade passed in a bloody whirlwind of vengeance as Celestine was hailed as the Crusade's figurehead, the entire sector being scoured of not just the schematisms, but every being the Crusaders deemed unworthy of existing upon the worlds of man. Lord Ansgar, the Crusade's leader, believed the Holy War would reach its conclusion at the capital world of the Palatine sector. But Celestine insisted upon first liberating a small backwater world named Sanctus Lys. Unknown to all but her, the world was home to the ancient shrine of the Fiery Heart, once visited by Saint Catherine. Celestine ordered a broken altar moved aside and the flagstones beneath it taken up, uncovering the entrance to a hidden crypt. Barring any from following her, she descended dusty steps that none had trodden for millennia. As first light broke above the ruined shrine, Celestine rose from the tomb, borne aloft on a column of divine radiance, and attended by cherubs and doves. She was now clad in a suit of shining golden armor, and wielded a blade wreathed in sweet-scented petals, its blade so bright none could bear look upon it. She gazed around, and all who dared meet her eyes were struck down by equal parts heavenly adoration and infernal terror. After her apotheosis, Lord Ansgar and a conclave of his Thorian compatriots declared Celestine a living saint. Her presence invested the faithful with an unprecedented fervor, and hundreds of thousands of heretics met a fiery end at the hands of her armies. Many were fearful in her presence, for to stand before her was to submit to the judgment of one whose example could never be emulated. Celestine has fought the faithless over long centuries, and in all corners of the Imperium. Many times it has appeared that she has been struck down in battle, but wherever she falls, she inevitably rises once more like the radiant dawn. The Gemini Superior often fight at her side. Each of these champions is possessed of a portion of Celestine's grace, and would lay down their lives to protect her. It is difficult to predict where Celestine and her Gemini Superior will appear, but wherever they go, the Emperor's will is made manifest. Ephrael Stern. Ephrael Stern has fought insurrectionists, mutants, abominations of the warp, and Xenos monstrosities beyond count in her defense of the Imperial Creed. Her skill at arms is beyond question, though accusations of heretical powers manifesting in her presence have led her and her Eldari comrade, Kaiganil, to exist as nomadic outcast warriors. Ephrael Stern was once a seraphim of the Order of Our Martyred Lady, though she has since been known by many other epithets. Thrice-born, the Demon-Fuge, Sainted Savior, and Heretical Witch have all been used either in laudatory praise or hate-filled condemnation. No records of her existence remain in the sanctuary in which she once trained and prayed. If any survive, then they may be inside the Order's fortress shrine within the Covenant Sanctorum, or perhaps in the private archives of certain high-ranking Inquisitors Hereticus. That such individuals are concerned with her deeds is a reflection of the suspicion in which Stern is now held. But it was not always thus. It was on Parnis, during an expedition to discover the fate of a lost order Pranatus, but Stern was slain in battle against the minions of a greater demon of Slaanesh. This loathsome demon had physically ensnared 700 sisters of the Lost Order and forged them into a single flesh prison, formed of their bodies. The creature's followers called the unholy creation the Screaming Cage, for the sisters who formed it suffered endless agonies. Yet, while the Screaming Cage tormented their conjoined bodies and magnified their pain, the damned sisters were also fused in mental and spiritual might, united in their faith. Stern's selfless attack gave the entities of the Screaming Cage their chance. Seizing the opportunity, they poured their spiritual strength into Stern's fallen form. In a blaze of righteous power, Stern was propelled back to life as a tremendously potent and gifted champion against the servants of Chaos. Since that day, Ephrael Stern has had to battle not only the worshippers of the Dark Gods, but also those of her own Imperium who believe her to be irrevocably tainted. Though they might find their fuel in faith, Stern's powers manifest themselves in a supernatural fashion that many have mistaken or chosen to condemn as witchery. She is stronger and faster than any of her sisters, unleashes searing bolts of holy judgment upon her foes, and when death has claimed her, she has returned to life each time. In this era of proliferating psychic mutation and heresy, such supernatural occurrences are more than enough to render Stern a target for more than one zealot. Nor is she helped by the company she keeps. Bound together by the strands of fate, she travels with an Eldari known as Kaiganil, or simply the Pariah. Once, this warrior was a harlequin of the Laughing God. Now, he is a wanderer, an outcast from his own people, who has found his place at Stern's side. Kaiganil has brought Stern by dark paths to the repository of forbidden lore known as the Black Library, and it is through him that Stern has made contact with the Inari, though none but she yet know the true purpose in this.